This is real news. Where is it? I'm Peter Laufer, co-director of the University of Oregon UNESCO Crossings Institute.
It gives me great pleasure to welcome to Real News my friend and colleague here at the University of Oregon School of Journalism and Communication, Professor Chris Chavez. And Chris Chavez comes to the Academy with a professional history in advertising, and he is a scholar of advertising. He teaches advertising. So, Chris, one of the reasons I thought it would be valuable to talk with you for this series is this question. What can we learn from advertising, good advertising and bad advertising, that can help us as news consumers weed out the misinformation, the disinformation, the propaganda, the lies from the news we want and need?
Right. Thank you. And thank you for having me, Peter. Right. And I guess I'll start with a short story. I was in my office, and I think there was an alum that was walking through, and he was casually having a conversation with whoever was leading the tour. And he said, gosh, I really hate the fact that advertising and journalism are in the same building, because advertising is out to tell lies and journalism is about truth. And I remember thinking about at the time, just that it's in some ways a disingenuous response, right? Because the one thing you could say about advertising is that it has to be truthful. For all the claims that we make about false advertising, it is highly regulated in a way that journalism isn't. And there's no pretense, right, that it's laying kind of note to objective fact in the same way that journalism, which purports to tell the truth. So anything that comes out of an advertiser's mouth has to be supported. It has to be substantiated. It has to be truthful, or else you open yourself up to litigation. So I always thought that sort of comparison was in some ways dishonest and a little bit disingenuous, because I would say that if you do see an ad, for all intents and purposes, it's truthful. It may use different kinds of rhetorical strategies, but legally it has to be true. And in journalism, I don't know if you have the same sort of at least legal scrutiny that you would get with other forms of communication. So,
but how does that fact, which I want to get back to in a moment, sure, but how does that fact, that legal fact, help us then differentiate between that which we should consider real news and the other?
Right. So I think part of it is sort of the lens in which you kind of read these two types of and they're both in some ways persuasive communication. So you go back to the ancient Greeks, you know, journalism, advertising, public relations, even though they may not have called them those things, were all forms of rhetoric, of forms of persuasive communications. In some ways, the consumer reads advertising differently than they read news. So they read advertising knowing that it could be flourished or it could be, you know, making a persuasive case. They read it for what it is. So they're not necessarily going to be duped in the same way. I think they come to journalism with a little bit of a different lens, hoping to see truth, whatever truth that may be. And we know there's a whole other range of factors that go into, well, what is truth and truth for whom? Whose truth, framed in which ways? But I think it's the pretense of truth and objectivity that we come to journalism with that you may not come to with advertising. I think they're just reading them with a very different lens, like genre. You know, genre is such an important part of kind of the lens that we take with some of these things. But
so that doesn't really help us. It's fascinating, but it doesn't really help us learn how to differentiate the good from the bad that is presented, particularly in our era, with such skill that it's very hard for the professional, let alone the layperson, to differentiate that which is fake.
Yeah. So in terms of a specific skill or strategy, I mean, maybe one of the goals is to read one more journalism and then different kinds of journalism and then triangulate. So at least the logic of the marketplace is that, yeah, I may put my ad out there, but there's three or four other competing ads out there poking holes in that argument. So it's sort of the discourse of the marketplace that in theory, again, whether it's in practice or not, truth emerges, right? You just have everybody advancing their own point of view. If you kind of limit your journalism consumption to one source, you're not getting sort of that triangulation of perspective.
Exactly.
And if you're still reading three newspapers, but they're all coming from the same paradigm, like if you were to open up New York Times, NPR, Washington Post, chances are you're going to read these same exact headlines. In some cases, they're quoting the same exact journalists. There's a lot of cross-pollination. So you might be reading multiple sources, but you're really reading the same source. So kind of looking at alternative news and looking at alternative viewpoints that hopefully you can start to, again, having these competing points of view, truth emerges.
I mean, yeah, while you're talking, I'm thinking of advertising cliches and tropes like new, improved, better, cleaner, faster.
Right.
And some of that really does carry over in its own way in journalism, especially these days, I was about to say, but always, really. We look at the turn of the 20th century and yellow journalism, we see new, improved, faster. Should, and this is a trap question, should we take those laws, those rules that you describe that mandate under penalty for advertising to be accurate and overlay them on journalism here in the land of the First Amendment?
Right, definitely. And I don't think it's necessarily something I would advocate for sort of regulating the press or regulating free speech, but we are starting to see the influence of marketplace dynamics in journalism. And maybe just being transparent and open about that, that you are reading something that has been subsidized, right? They're pursuing a market, you know, and we know these things, or at least scholars of advertising and journalism. I'm not sure if the consumer necessarily does, because again, there's this pretense of how it's discussed. Is it, it's trustworthy. Everybody's laying claim to the idea of trustworthiness and truthfulness. Even though we know that that's sort of kind of an ideal or maybe a fallacy. So I wouldn't necessarily do that. I guess one other kind of thought on that is where you really start to see this happening. And I have this conversation every time there's an election cycle, because election coverage and election advertising go back at such a rapidity, right? That you can make all kinds of false claims about the candidates. And it, you know, does it lead to truth? Not necessarily. But it's not regulated in a way that commercial advertising is, you know, political advertising and political journalism. And we see some of the consequences of that, where there's a lot of misinformation that's floating out there because it's not regulated and there's no time for libel suits. I mean, it's happening at such a quick pace that, you know, new messages are coming out every week and then you discard them and then move on to the next one.
We're trapped by our own understandable embracement of the First Amendment and right. And even past government interference, the idea of free speech, no matter what that speech is. Before we let you go from Real News, you also at the university are the director of the Center for Latino, Latina, and Latin American Studies. When you look at the Anglo-oriented press, and using press to mean news media,
yep.
And you look at that which is in Latin America or in the Spanish language in North America, do you see the same kinds of problems, or do you see it play out in a different manner because of cultural differences?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there were two points that I would love to make there. One is that, again, when you're looking at media diversity in terms of your own personal consumption, again, if you're reading the New York Times, Washington Post, NPR, they're going to be pretty much the same headlines. You know, I encourage students, especially journalism students, to kind of look at the ethnic press or the alternative press, and they're going to see different headlines. They're going to see parts of the world that are not covered by NPR because they don't have the bureaus there. So an increased coverage of Latin America and then the U.S. Latinos here, which don't get much coverage. You know, they're minimized in the mainstream press. So you'll start to see how other news organizations understand, categorize, and frame the world. So I think that's one big part of it. I would say the challenge that Spanish language, at least media, faces is that, so the current U.S. Census came out, and well, Latinos are probably close to, 18%, you know, one in five closing in, but their capacity to influence the public discourse is non-existent. Right, they punch far below their weight compared to, say, other ethnic communities. Right, that are shaping the public discourse. And so, Spanish language media, whether it's because of linguistic isolation or social isolation, don't have the capacity to shape public news discourses in the way that English language media is. And I think that's sort of an unfortunate, byproduct of various forms of isolation.
although we have some, if not exceptions, some intriguing loud voices. And I think of Jorge Ramos, mm-hmm. who makes a lot of noise, and I don't say that in a pejorative manner, and it comes from what seems to me to be a pretty balanced way of operating in both cultures and both languages. And the onus may be on all of us. If we're going to be hanging out here together, we better learn Spanish or English, whichever one we better learn, or at least Spanglish.
Right. And he's an interesting case study, because for a while he was experimenting with English language journalism. There was a network that emerged called Fusion, which was supposed to be, you know, kind of a pivot from Spanish and English bilingualism and even English dominant news. But it was short-lived. It didn't really take in the market. So he's one of those figures that's widely popular and trusted amongst Latinos, but, you know, gets some press here when he scuffles with Trump, for example, during the campaign process. But otherwise, you know, not as much as he probably should be getting.
Thank you. As always, when we work together, it makes me think and makes me happy that we're colleagues. Professor Chris Chavez from the University of Oregon School of Journalism and Communication here on Real News.
Thank you, Dr. Laufer.
You've been listening to Real News. Where is it? I'm Peter Laufer, co-director of the University of Oregon UNESCO Crossings Institute. Join us again for more on Real News.